compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right. Well, you can see how quickly the time goes by. Here we are at hour three. Thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. I appreciate it very much. And since we've been talking a lot about media and the way that media shapes people's attitudes, including, quite frankly, the rather rapid drop-off in faith. The atheists love this stuff. They're happy to see so many, at least ostensible Christians, who are turning away from faith in God. Maybe they're just going into nothing. I'm a spiritual person, but not religious. Sometimes people say that, or they just say, I don't really believe in God anymore at all. And we're seeing a headlong rush in that direction. And so we're taking a little time to kind of analyze some of the reasons behind it and the way in which the news media, as one example, has changed. It has morphed into something very different today from what it was before. And we're looking at other things like the use of TikTok and other platforms of social media and how your kids and you yourself, for that matter, let's be honest, I'm in that number too. I consume a lot of information on social media, and my social media of choice is Twitter. And if you're curious to see, well, like, you know, what are some of the sources that I'm looking at? These are not the only sources, but if you look at my Twitter feed at Patrick Madrid and just check out my followers, the people that I'm following, it's primarily news organizations. But my goal is, with these and other places that I do look at, I'm trying to get a synthetic view of what's going on in the world as best I can, as best anybody can, by looking at a very wide variety of sources, both American and foreign, sources whose ideologies I maybe am more inclined to be aligned with and more that I'm not aligned with. I want to see what people on a variety of different fronts are saying. And that, quite frankly, is not merely for my own personal curiosity, but because I want to be well prepared when I get on the radio with you, because I want to share with you information that's going to be meaningful and hopefully helpful and always accurate. So that's the goal in my doing that. But, you know, everybody's interested in the news to some extent, or they want to know what's going on. And so because of the proliferation of so many of these different media outlets, people's perspective on the world is changing. It's shifting. It's moving in a direction that in many cases is not a good one, as evidenced by the rather rapid decline in people's faith. I chalk that up to a great deal of what's being put out there on social media. So with that being what it is, now let's take a look at perhaps the biggest, the behemoth of all of these different new technological and media companies, and that would be Facebook. So this is a story from Technology Review. Technology Review is a publication that's put out by MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And as the title of the review says, they focus on tech. So this recent article that came out says that troll farms, and I'll define that for you in a minute, troll farms reached 140 million Americans a month on Facebook before the 2020 election. Now, this is not a political thing, and please don't get uptight. I'm not going to be dealing with politics here. I want to look at the technological underpinnings of the way in which people's attitudes, from everything from God to how they look at sexuality to social issues, how these things are being influenced, and often in insidious ways, by social media. Now, in this case, we're going to look specifically, as Technology Review does, at Facebook. So here are some highlights from this article. In the run-up to the 2020 election, the most highly contested in U.S. history, Facebook's most popular pages for Christian and Black American content were being run by Eastern European troll farms. These pages were a part of a larger network that collectively reached nearly half of all Americans, according to an internal company report, and achieved that reach not through user choice, but primarily as a result of Facebook's own platform design and algorithms. Now, I'm going to pause here. Once again, I want to emphasize to you that regardless of what your opinion is with regard to the 2020 election, if you feel that the election was fraudulent or if you feel that the election was fair and accurate, whatever you may feel about this, please understand that this article and what I'm discussing in this case is not about that. It's not about, you know, who really won the election or anything like that. I'm not dealing with that issue. And, you know, for the record, well, I'll just leave it at that. So please don't read anything between the lines that isn't there. We're looking at what does the technology do to the way people look at the world? What is it doing to you, in other words? How is it affecting you? And maybe in ways that you're completely oblivious to. And there's no shame in that. There's no shame in it because we're all human and we all are, we all live according to our senses. We gather information through our senses. So what you see and what you hear and what you taste and what you touch, all these things are the way in which we amass information and then we make decisions on that basis. So let's consider this phenomenon dispassionately. And I know nowadays it's not easy to be dispassionate, but let's be dispassionate about it. And consider that maybe your kids, your neighbors, and perhaps even you yourself, there's always room for us to improve, that's for sure, that maybe your and my and our attitudes are being manipulated by people, governments, individuals, whoever, who have a vested interest in making you look at the world a particular way. And I'll give you a quick example before I dive back into this article. Communist China. Communist China really, really, really wants you to look at them through rose-colored glasses. They want you to see the communist Chinese government as benign and good and helpful and benevolent and all those things that they're really not. But you bet that if communist China, which very strongly influences many of these tech companies, if they are able to influence your attitude toward things, including how you look at China, they're going to do so. And the ability for whether it's China or some other entity to do that is it's here now. It's not something that's in the future. It's happening right now. So let's get back into some of the specifics. Again, according to Technology Review, the report that they're referring to here, written in October of 2019, and it was obtained by MIT Technology Review from a former Facebook employee who was not involved in researching it, found that after the 2016 election, Facebook failed to prioritize fundamental changes to how its platform promotes and distributes information. The company instead, they say, pursued a whack-a-mole strategy that involved monitoring and quashing the activity of bad actors when they engaged in political discourse and adding some guardrails that prevented the worst of the worst. Now, we've been hearing about this a lot. We've been hearing, you may remember how in the 2016 election, the whole mantra from the left was that the election was rigged and it was basically the Russians who did this and they manipulated everybody against Hillary Clinton and you couldn't trust the election results. And that mantra went on for quite a while and eventually it simmered down and then it started up all over again. But this time when the election went in the other direction, then it was the people on the right who were saying, many of them anyway, saying that the election was rigged and there were problems with it. So it's a similar kind of phenomenon. And much of it has to do with people's perception of reality, what they're seeing on places like Facebook. So you have to ask yourself questions like, what countries would want to destabilize the United States? What countries might want to, through the use of these server farms, these troll farms, etc.? And by the way, I promise I'd explain that. So a troll farm would be, to explain it simply, would be, let's say, a data center where you've got hundreds or maybe even thousands of racked computers that are programmed to search out. So these are bots and programs that are designed to search for certain kinds of comments on places like Facebook or Twitter. And then this is not a real human person, but it's actually a program that starts to, for example, bombard or harass or argue against things that they find out there. So if you see somebody who makes a post on Facebook and it's got a whole bunch of, you know, pushback against it, some of that pushback very well may be from a troll farm. So it's an automated technological way of pinpointing opposition that you don't like and then pushing back against it in the form of what appear to be people who are making points. In some cases, and maybe in many cases, these are not even human beings. These are just the programs that are employed by these troll farms. So back to the former Facebook insider. Instead of using servers, so let me just back up one step. So the reporter on this, who had access to this report that was done, said that troll farms, these are professional groups that work in a coordinated fashion to provoke, to post provocative content, propaganda. They do this on social networks, and they build massive audiences by running networks of Facebook pages. So their content was reaching 140 million users per month in the U.S., 75% of whom had never followed any of those pages. They were seeing the content because Facebook's content recommendation system had pushed it into their news feeds. So it's not as though they opted into it. It's just what they were receiving. So Joe Osborne, a Facebook spokesperson, said in a statement that the company, quote, had already been investigating these topics at the time of the report, saying that at that time we stood up teams, developed new policies, and collaborated with industry peers to address these networks. We've taken aggressive enforcement actions against these kinds of foreign and domestic inauthentic groups and have shared the results publicly on a quarterly basis. Now, in the article, it gets into quite a bit more about that, but I want to juxtapose two issues here. On the one hand, you do have, in fact, that real and present danger of organizations, even countries, for example, who are hell-bent on changing people's attitudes towards things. And I got to tell you, this is my personal view on this issue. It boggles my mind that people will trust what they see on social media. I mean, why on earth would you want to get your media, get your news from a platform like Facebook? I'm not here to judge anybody, but come on. This is Facebook. We talked about TikTok. We talked about some of these other platforms. We have to be, as Jesus said, as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. So that kind of trusting to the point of gullibility is not what we should be doing, especially when so many people are out there trying to influence the way you think about the world. You have to be very careful of this. Now, on the other hand, so we have the misinformation, the propaganda, but on the other hand, Facebook, as one example, is very hard left. Google is very hard left. They're far left-wing organizations, and their company outlook on life is shaping the way other people are thinking because they use the algorithms to either prevent you from seeing some things that could change your mind, or they silence you or other people who are saying things that they don't like. And that's another big part of the problem. So it's not merely the manipulation in the former category, but it's also basically the silencing of voices that are contrary to what the people in these organizations want you to know. So they're going to decide for you what you're allowed to see and what you're not allowed to see. That's another big part of the problem. So as you make your way through this article, and we have to take a break here in a second, so I'll leave it at this. As you make your way through this article and you read about the troll farms, and you read about how they very clearly are able to manipulate people's attitudes on things, it seems to me, Cyrus, I don't know what you think about this, but it seems to me that the easiest way to avoid the dangers that we were talking about is to, number one, don't get your news from Facebook. Don't get your news from TikTok. Hey, get your news from relevant radio. How about that? Don't be gullible. Don't allow yourself and your attitudes about things to be shaped by the things that you see there. I'm not saying don't be on Facebook. I doubt that, you know, I would be a voice crying in the wind if I were saying that. I'm on Facebook barely. I'm on Twitter pretty regularly. But even I have to be careful too. I mean, Cyrus, you know this. There are times when I'll send you a story that maybe has video or audio, and we both have the same reaction. We need to check to make sure this is real, right? Think of all the times when we've had to do that in preparation for a show.
All the time. And a couple of times it's gotten past us or past me, and I'll be the first one to say, hey, I'm sorry. I should have vetted that.
I only know of one time that that happened.
It was one
honestly,
time. I'll never forget it.
Well, it was so in the moment, and it was so there was a huge news story. We don't have to go into the details, but it was a huge news story. Everybody was, you know, in a frenzy, and we're trying to deal with information that's coming at us thick and fast. So I don't fault you for that. That was just, you know, it is what it is. But you're right, ever since then, and even before that,
yeah,
we're very careful to say, okay, this video or this audio, we have to make sure this is real and corroborate it. And, you know, I hate the phrase fact check because it's being used to death.
Yeah.
But we have to fact check it, right? Because otherwise, you know, we don't want to be part of that problem.
We do not. We are part of the solution.
Amen to that. So we try to take our own advice here on the Patrick Madrid Show. And that, of course, means be very discriminating, very discerning. Don't believe everything. Not everything that glitters is gold. Sometimes it may be gold, but very often it's not gold. So check out this article from Technology Review about the troll farms. Cyrus is going to get that posted for you on the show Twitter feed. You can check it out there. But it is definitely worth your knowing about. And my hope, anyway, is that it will help you and your kids, whoever you may share it with, to be more prudent and more thoughtful in the way that you consume news, especially with regard to how it may change your view of reality. We have to take a break, but we'll be back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
Welcome back. Cyrus, I recall it wasn't that long ago that you and I were talking about, remember the Russian dash cam videos about just crazy, insane things that go on in Russia?
Oh, yeah.
And you brought up topic about how, well, yeah, I mean, first of all, those Russian dash cam videos on YouTube for me are just jaw-dropping in terms of some of the insane, like, traffic accidents. And again, nothing gory. I mean, I've never seen one where you even see pretty much a human being, but you see these cars just, it's insane. And it's a great lesson in physics and another reason why you should wear your seatbelt.
What not to do.
But you brought up an interesting point, and that was, I'd like to just return to that for a minute. You brought up an interesting point when it came up on the show last week, I think it was, that people can scam you. They can pretend to, maybe, you know, they could tell people that you hit them while they were crossing the crosswalk or
those
something.
Those are my favorite Russian videos where so it's all on camera and you see the person drag their bike into the street and then they lay down in front of the car.
Yeah. And completely faking an accident.
Yeah. And the car's just parked there. Like, it's just stopped in the street because someone walked in the street. And then these people say they got ran over. And then they sue the driver. And so now a bunch of people have these cameras in their car, and they record everything that's happening outside of the car.
And as I recall, you said you were you either were planning to get one or you had gotten one.
I have one.
And you wanted to document your – so you have one now.
I have one, yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Have you driven in Russia lately? If so, I'd like to see the videos.
Nope. The only time I ever thought about – using it is I had these motorcycles pass me on the freeway. They're going probably 200 miles an hour.
Oh my God.
And I was like, you know what? They should probably get arrested because they're putting, if they crash, they're dead. I mean, there's no amount of helmet that's going to save you, but they're putting my kids' lives in danger.
And isn't it true that if you don't turn on your blinker within the prescribed period of time before you make a turn, the police will always be there and they will always give you a ticket. But when these maniacs go by on 200 miles an hour, there's never a policeman there to deal with that.
Yep. You know, I did get some...
But if you don't come to a complete stop, you're getting a ticket
every time. I did get the satisfaction of someone, I was in a long line of cars and some big old truck flew past us in the wrong lane, ran a red light and to keep going, and a car that was facing us on the other side of the street turned on their lights and went after him. So I actually got
It was
an undercover cop, so I finally got to see someone get busted for doing that. And it was
somebody who really deserved it.
They really deserved it.
I can just picture you taking pleasure in that.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. And I don't usually take pleasure in other people's misfortune, But boy, this guy's.
But he deserved it.
He deserved it.
Yeah. Well, those are kind of fun to watch as well. Well, you're going to love this, Cyrus, and maybe you want to check the camera that you got for your car. This is from Gizmodo. Several automakers offer features where a camera inside your vehicle monitors you, and it sets off alerts when it detects you starting to fall asleep. As one example, researchers at the Fraunhofer Institute have developed an even smarter in-car camera system that can figure out exactly what you're doing, potentially improving the safety for semi-autonomous driving features. But it's also a great way to, as the headline of this article says, it can detect, these cameras can detect every dumb thing you're doing while you're driving. Not that you would ever do anything so dumb.
No, so it can tell when you're texting or, you know, leaning backwards, you know, yelling at your kids in the back seat to sit down and be quiet, put their seatbelts on.
Well, that and more. Listen to this. There isn't a publicly available self-driving system that can handle every road situation all on its own. Unplanned interruptions like construction or accidents and even driving in crowded downtown sections of a large city usually require the driver to take control of the wheel, but that handoff can be tricky. In an ideal world, the driver in a semi-autonomous vehicle would always be paying attention to the road ahead and ready to step in at a moment's notice to take control of the vehicle. But humans will be humans, and they will always... And there's always the chance that an autonomous system will try to hand over the controls of the vehicle while the driver is distracted with a phone call or taking a sip of coffee, which potentially sets up a dangerous situation. And they don't even get into the more dangerous ones, like people who are texting on their phone while they're driving. And what's the old saying? People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. So I think this is a pretty common thing. That's about all I'm going to say on that point. But I'm not saying anything more. Those situations, the article says, are what prompted researchers from the Fraunhofer Institute of Optronics, System Technologies and Image Exploitation. Say that. Let me say that for you five times fast. Fraunhofer Institute of Optronics, System Technologies and Image Exploitation. They need an acronym. So F-I-O-S, FIOS. FIOSTE. Now, that's even clunky, too. Imagine trying to tell somebody, so where do you work? Oh, I work at the Fraunhofer Institute of Optronics System Technologies. And you have to stop and take a breath before you can finish saying it.
Yeah, and that's when they say, never mind.
And image. Yeah, never mind. You get halfway through the title of the company, and they've walked away. I don't even know what optronics is. Actually, I do. Now that I read the article, I do. So they take the capabilities of in-car cameras even further. Instead of simply providing alerts when it looks like you're falling asleep, the new system uses AI-powered image recognition, this is fun, to construct a digital skeleton of you, the driver, that looks kind of like a stick figure doodle. Although it's a basic representation of your current pose, the digital skeleton provides enough details for the system to interpret what exactly you're doing, while additional object recognition keeps tabs on the location items like smartphones and coffee cups. When the two systems are paired, a vehicle is able to determine if you are paying attention to the road or distracted with other activities like texting or eating or over interacting with other passengers in the vehicle. By keeping tabs on what you're doing as the driver, a semi-autonomous driving system can determine how distracted you are and potentially how long it will take you to return your focus to driving. And that to take into account before handing control of the vehicle back to you. Now, this is regarding the semi-autonomous cars, which are not really here yet in any significant way, but they're coming, I suppose. So it says, making driving safer isn't the only application of this technology. Many vehicles are able to park themselves, but a driver can't simply use a voice command like park over there and expect the car to find the spot all by itself, so you have to still guide it. So long story short, Cyrus, as these technologies develop, and they are developing quickly, and they're being deployed, it not only reduces your privacy, but also, I mean, I could just picture, don't you think that Avis Rental Car and Budget and Alamo and all the other rental car agencies, I think they're like basically three of them, and they own all these other brands. So you think you're getting, you know, a deal over here, but it's actually owned, you know, I'll go over here to budget, but it's actually owned by maybe Hertz or something like that. In any case, don't you think that these car companies are really keen on knowing which of the drivers who rent cars from them are actually driving properly and which of the drivers are fiddling with their cell phones and other things like that? Because they know, I mean, not only the loss of a vehicle potentially, but also insurance claims and things. So without you even realizing it, Cyrus, without you even realizing it, if you, now I shouldn't say you, because you would never fiddle with your cell phone. You would never text while you're driving. You would never do any of those things. I know you too well. So I know that.
Not going to do it.
But for all the folk out there, Cyrus, who do text while they're driving or they're, you know, doing something other than driving, they're not paying attention to the road, it would be seamless and invisible for a rental car company when you roll up to the counter to rent your vehicle and the guy plugs in your information and up on the screen comes a different rate, maybe a different rental rate for you because they know all about your driving habits. And I'm saying you, Cyrus, and of course, I mean you rhetorically, but they would know all about your driving habits. This is gold for them, absolute gold, not to mention other companies that would want this information. So the in-car camera, the dash cam, the more sophisticated they become, the more invasive they become, and the more that data is precious to companies like rental car companies, because then they could say, oh, well, this guy has a habit of this. And so even if he hasn't gotten into an accident yet, the likelihood of that happening is pretty high. Or the likelihood of him, you know, causing damage to the property is pretty high. So they could adjust the rights using the rates. They could adjust the rates using these algorithms on the spot. And so you might be paying $20, $30 a day more than the guy who just got his rental car because the system knows how people are driving. Isn't it incredible the way technology serves us, but it also can enslave us if we're not careful?
That's really interesting. Yeah. Are they even making technology for the consumer anymore? It's for these companies.
Well, you know, with the Internet of Things now, the smart appliances, the smart refrigerator, the smart microwave, you know, these smart appliances that we have, not to mention some of the things like the Echo and the Alexa and all these other things, they're all phoning home. They're all sending the information back to the mothership. And yeah, of course, I guess part of it's for quality control. And also, hey, a part is about to go out. But who knows in the process what other bits of privacy that you think you have, but you really don't, are being chipped away at because we're so interconnected now. So whether it's a dash cam video or a smart TV that can watch you, you know, we talked about that, Cyrus, the smart TVs that have a built-in camera.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get
just
to
imagine
a point when there's no shame anymore because people know that they're constantly being watched and recorded. Everything they do, even when they're in their car or when they're sitting on their couch because their TV's watching them. So it just gets to a point where maybe like my kids' kids will grow up in a world where they're so used to being constantly recorded.
That's a good point.
They'll just be the world they live in.
You know, earlier we talked about MTV, and just to go back to that for a moment, remember how it was all the rage? Now, by then I had stopped watching MTV. I watched it in the early days because I liked to watch the music videos and see the bands and things like that when I was in my early 20s. But then it eventually morphed into the reality shows, and I don't remember the names of them, but I do remember how revolutionary it was where they would get these, you know, like five or six good-looking young adults, you know,
Real World,
pretty
San
girls.
Francisco.
Is that what it was? Okay. And they would have cameras everywhere in the house. Okay. Everywhere. I remember hearing about these shows, and I'm being honest with you when I say I never actually watched one. So I'm not trying to be coy or anything. I never actually saw it, but I was aware of it. And so you've got these beautiful girls, usually scantily clad, and you have these handsome dudes, and you put them together in a house, and there's cameras everywhere. And everybody knew what the real reason was for that was because, and I'll be discreet about this, the reason people were watching those shows is because they wanted to see if anything would happen on camera. That's why they watched the show. They didn't care about them cooking breakfast or watching TV or interacting in mundane ways. The whole quote-unquote thrill of the show was the voyeurism so that you could see, hopefully, maybe if, you know, if something happens, you're going to see it. And that's what was so novel about those shows. And now what you're saying is, you know, that's like horse and buggy stuff compared to the way things are now.
Right. And those reality shows, I have a buddy that's a sound guy, and he works on those kind of shows, and they're not real. So if anyone watches a reality show, they're about as real as wrestling, as professional wrestling.
What? You mean that's not real?
Yeah, sorry to break it to you. They have these situations, and they talk about what's happening and what they want them to. It's kind of like a sitcom that doesn't have a script. They just have the ideas, and
they improvise,
and they do it again and again and again until they get it just right. So reality
shows
are
not real. Oh, so it's not extemporaneous. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that makes sense. And, you know, it's gone far beyond that now. So I won't name any of the shows, but there are some of these shows now where they're putting these nubile young women with men on islands and other things. This has been going on for a while. My point is simply this, that I guess maybe to your point, Cyrus, and that is that we live not only in a voyeuristic society, but there is a kind of exhibitionist dimension to it as well. And maybe that's the point you're making, and that is that people, without maybe necessarily wanting to be exhibitionists, they've just sort of fallen into it because they realize that everywhere I go, there's a camera, and all my smart appliances and the smart TV and Alexa and everything that's there. So my life is on full display. So what the heck? I'm just going to live life and not really care. I could see that happening.
What a scary world that will be.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of personal privacy is just no longer an issue. So I bring these things up once again, not to bring people down, but to make you aware so that you are conscious of some of these pitfalls that are out there and hopefully be able to avoid them, certainly for the sake of your children as well. I think am I right, Cyrus? We're about a point where we have to take another break, aren't we? Okay, so let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
I am in the sky, looking at you.
Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. You know, it occurs to me, since we've been talking quite a bit on the program today, I guess somewhat by happenstance, but we're talking quite a bit about technology and big tech and social media and all these things. I've got something for your Good to Know file that I'd like to weave into the mix here as well. This is from Kim Komando. She's kind of a recognized expert on computers and software and all things digital. And she's got a very interesting article on her website, komando.com, and it is about internet safety. And you may say, yeah, I already know that stuff, but let me share some of this with you. It's insightful, and at the very least, it may be something that you can share with your kids, especially those who are still coming up through the ranks and are new to using things like social media accounts and things. You want to keep them safe, obviously. So here in this article are 12 things she says you should never do online. And you say, well, do tell. Okay, so here it goes. She says, we all make silly mistakes. We answer robocalls. Those numbers do look familiar. We click links we should have checked first and open spam emails. Everyone is vulnerable and can be caught off guard. It's what we do next that really counts. Do you believe the caller claiming to be an IRS employee? Use your credit card on a sketchy site or download files from a sender you don't recognize? If you do, the consequences can be dire. That's why we have a list here of 12 things you should never do online, along with a do-it-yourself security tip list, as reminders that you have to be very vigilant with every click you make online. Now, this is something good to teach your kids about as well. It used to be that you would have to talk about drugs with your kids, and you still have to have that talk, but now you have to talk about internet security as well. So the first of the 12 items on the list is, don't give correct answers when setting up your security questions. So when you have to answer your challenge questions. Where was your first job? What is your mother's maiden name? You know, where did you meet your wife? Things like that. So her advice is, give fake details, but you have to remember what the wrong answer is. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to answer that challenge question. She says, if someone knows personal details about you, they'll be able to answer these questions. So if somebody's trying to hack into one of your accounts and knows what your first job was or knows where you lived when you were a kid, what have you, that can easily be used to hack into your account. So use fake information. And
it's too hard to remember the real information. And now I'm supposed to make up. All right. I don't know.
Do you remember your first job, Cyrus? You remember your first job?
It would depend on, was it the job I had when I was 12 or the first one I, you know, paid taxes on when I was 14?
Or, you
know, I don't know.
Yeah.
So my answer could be different depending on what I'm thinking about that first time I answer a security question. And I say that because that's exactly what's happened before.
I saw a funny cartoon. Oh. Yeah, no, I hear you. I saw a funny cartoon where this dad is giving like a life lesson to his young son he's just gotten him a dog. And he says, son, be real careful what you name this dog, because that's going to be one of your security questions for the rest of your life. You know,
that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Clever. All right. Second thing on the 12 things you should never do when you're online. If an ad sent you a link to a news site, don't click any download buttons. I know that some of this stuff sounds obvious, but it's amazing how many people fall for it. So an ad worked. You're browsing. You saw an ad box with an intriguing item, and you clicked on it. It takes you to another website with many other things you can buy. Oh, and that site has ads too. And when it comes to ads, the internet is like the movie Inception. There are dreams within dreams and ads within ads. While you're there, don't download anything from that site. Remember that anyone can put out ads, and many sites don't properly investigate their partners. That means that you could be browsing on a safe site and see an intriguing ad. You click the ad, and now you're taken to a site that's filled with malware, and you wouldn't even know it necessarily. So she advises a good rule of thumb is to simply avoid downloading when you can. Avoid clicking on those ads. And Cyrus, I'll tell you what I do, word of the wise. If I see something intriguing, well, let's say I'm browsing a news site and I'm doing my show prep for Relevant Radio for the Patrick Madrid Show, and I see something interesting, like, oh, that looks like a cool gadget, or that looks interesting, I look at what the name of it is, or if it says what the company is, then I just simply open another browser and I'll either search for it in Amazon, or I'll just do a search for it through the browser. And I'll find it, and then I'll see if it's something I'm interested in. But I never click on ads of any kind. Doesn't matter where I'm at. I never click on an ad. And that's one reason why. So that's a little thought there, Cyrus.
That is great advice. Yeah. Very good advice.
Thank you. Don't fall for fake posts is number three. If you get an email solicitation to participate in a survey or from a money-making opportunity you didn't sign up for, don't click the links. That goes for work from home gigs that seem a little too good to be true. Open a browser and search for the company. And so search for the company name plus the word scam. Chances are, if it's a scam, someone else has reported it. I do that with phone numbers. So you ever get this? You get a phone number from someplace maybe near where you live, but it just says the name of the town, doesn't say anything. So I will plug that phone number in. Sometimes it's an 800 number, but I'll plug it in. And 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, it is from some scammer. And so I love the function on the iPhone where you can just press block this caller.
Isn't that great?
And never hear from them again.
That's really, I do the same thing. You get a call, look it up, don't answer it, don't go to any link that they are trying to send you.
And you know, do you get those texts? I agree. Google is your friend. I get texts from time to time. And it's like, oh, you know, hey, Bill, we paid, you know, congratulations on paying off your, you know, your account. We have a free gift for you. And then there's a link and they want you to click it. And that's a scam.
Yeah, I've won all-inclusive cruises. And apparently my car insurance is always due. There's something with my car. I actually don't listen long enough. I hang up if I answer it at all.
It's the warranty girl.
That's it. Yep. Yeah. It's the warranty girl.
We have important news for you about your car. You know, the other one that I find interesting is where it's you know, when it's that kind of a one, or when it's that kind of a call, it's a pre-recorded call, but it sounds like it's a real person in real time. It's very clear. Usually, a young woman's voice, And it's like, hello? Oh, hey, can you hear me? And then they start talking, and then they get you. All right, we're moving briskly along here. Number five, don't reuse passwords or password formulas. Now, everybody knows, don't use QWERTY, K-W-E-R-T-Y, which are the keys on your computer, the top left hand. That's an easy one. Don't use password as your password. Don't use 123456 as your password.
So many people do that.
I know, yeah. Don't use ABCD1234. Don't use, I mean, just don't use your name. Don't use, because these are all so easy to hack into.
So someone told me that they, so when it's one of those verification things, like what was the name of your first animal? And so their answer would be,
you mean pet?
It'd be animal. It'd be whatever the last word in the question was. I'm like, that's really not smart.
Oh, because not smart at all.
They couldn't remember the real answer, and so they started doing that. And I'm like, yeah, it works great. I don't know. I don't think so.
Wow. Okay. I'm not going to say in public, of course, I'm not going to say how I do my passwords, but I try to make them. No, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yep.
You never know who's listening.
Make them guess.
You can use an online password generator, and those are cool because you can generate however long a password you want, and it would be a jumble of numbers and upper and lowercase and symbols and all that. Those are good. Don't use public Wi-Fi. This is number six. You know the saying, don't use public Wi-Fi, is like saying don't go out in public. It's impossible, people say, but you really should be careful about what you do on a public network. So don't do banking on a public network. What they recommend is get a VPN, a virtual private network. They say, by the way, if you have to use a public Wi-Fi, practice safe surfing. A VPN, virtual private network, creates an encrypted connection through a secure server that allows you to browse the internet. Businesses have been using VPN technology for years, and more private users are adopting them as well. I'm a big believer in VPN. Number seven, don't fight on social media. And you're saying, what? That's all I do on social media. Hopefully that's not all you do, but time and again, the list says research shows social media makes you depressed, angry, and isolated. During the pandemic, people believed that social media would bring us together, but really many people got sucked into scrolling through endless timelines, comments, and arguments. So the advice is if you can't break up with Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or whatever the channel is that monopolizes your time and incites you to fight, use common sense. Don't post anything that you wouldn't want your grandmother to see, or that could come back to haunt you when you look for a job, or that post or that website rather that would post an example of what not to do online.
That's number eight. You said something there at the top of that one. Research shows social media makes us depressed, angry, and isolated.
Ain't it the truth?
Ain't it the truth?
So let me pause on that note, Cyrus. I learned long ago, and I learned it, I think I learned it on Facebook, that there are people, sometimes real people, sometimes I guess bots, who's, it almost seems like their mission in life is to annoy you and to pester you and to take pot shots at you. Now, maybe it's because, you know, I have something of a, you know, public visibility, I guess. Maybe it's that. I don't know. But there are just people out there, including some fellow Catholics, who just, they make it their business to always be critical or to always, you know, they call them trolls for a reason. And people say, don't feed the trolls. So I'm going to be very forthright with you, Cyrus. I got to the point where I would just simply, at the slightest sign of somebody acting up like that and misbehaving and being that way, I just block them. Because what you talked about a minute ago, people become depressed and angry and such. I recognized long ago that I had an issue with somebody like saying something like that, and then I felt obligated to respond to it. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, I'm spending all this time responding to somebody who's just going to come back with another retort. And people, for whatever reason, they get into this mode. So I thought, life is too short. I don't want to deal with that. I can't babysit these people. They're polluting my timeline, or they're polluting my Twitter feed with these obnoxious comments or whatever. I just block them.
They're polluting your mind.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think some people look down on blocking as though, oh, you can't take it, huh? You can't. No, it's not that. It's just life's too short.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't like irking other people. I don't seek to irk anybody. I'm sure I do. I don't intend to. But I don't like being irked. That's a great word, by the way, irked. I don't like being irked. So, and I guess in a way, I'm sort of putting this out there for people to listen. I mean, I'd love to interact with you online, and I'm happy to do so. But when I see somebody who's just in it to argue or in it to be critical, I just block them. That's all. And I move on because life's too short, and I'm not interested in babysitting people's bad behavior. Number 8, don't post sensitive photos online. Now, this is interesting. We talked about that Nirvana album cover, Cyrus. Remember with the kid in the pool?
Oh, yeah.
Chasing the money?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, now he's an adult baby chasing.
Chasing the money.
Yeah.
Hey, that, I thought that was a great insight when you came up with that.
That's fun.
A couple of weeks ago or whatever. So the point here, the core point here, is that there are plenty of child predators who set up fake social media profiles and they look for innocent victims using pictures that they find on people's social media. So remember, your kids, you yourself, etc., even if it's an innocent picture, even if there's nothing per se objectionable about it, there are people out there who are going to right-click and save the image, and then they may use that image to try to ensnare other people. So just be careful. Don't post vacation photos, and don't post updates about your vacation while you're gone. If you venture out for a trip, even if you're just, you know, gone for a few days, she says, think twice before you post it on social media, because you're posting these in-the-moment updates and things like that. Hey, I'm out of town, basically, is what you're saying. My house is empty. Go burglarize me. Burglarize me. So there are people out there who will pay attention to your social media to find out when you're not home. Then they might go in and rob you. So it happens. Do it yourself advice. Purchase a home alarm system so you can monitor your property. That makes sense. Number 10, never diagnose yourself on WebMD or similar sites. Now, if you need medical information, that's one thing. But don't do a self-diagnosis. So let's say you have a persistent cough and you searched online, you diagnosed yourself with pneumonia, tuberculosis, lung cancer, heart disease, acid reflux, chronic bronchitis. Those conditions share similar symptoms, and you're all freaked out now. The point here is leave the diagnosis to the medical professionals. You can use those medical reference sites to learn more about what your doctors tell you, but always consult your doctor. Don't self-diagnose. Number 11, don't drunk shop online. Cyrus, I'm never going to ask you that question if you've ever done that. I would never ask you that question because I'm a sensitive guy. And so I'm not going to ask you that question. But I have a feeling there are people out there who drunk shop. Actually, until I read this article, I never really gave that much thought. But people who, you know, they hit the sauce and then they go out on Amazon and they have a shopping spree. Just imagine your credit card balance. And you're getting a credit card alert because you are not sober. Not you personally, Cyrus, of course, never you. But there are people who do that, apparently in sufficient numbers that it warrants to be number 11 on this list of things you should never do online. So the advice is set up a spending alert with your bank. Most banks will allow you to set a dollar amount. If you go over that amount, you'll get a text message or an email. That way, if you've had too much to drink, and by the way, don't have too much to drink, but if you do, in a few hours, check your messages. You'll still have time to cancel your orders. It reminds me of that, of the stories like the little girl who ordered like $10,000 in Barbie toys on Alexa because it was open.
I remember that.
And then number 12, that was a funny story. Not funny for the parents, but funny for us. Number 12 is don't take quizzes online, especially on Facebook. When you're tempted to take a quiz like which friend's character is your soulmate, you're potentially handing over your personal information. When you take those quizzes, you're helping their websites build their profile on you. So don't take the quizzes, as tempting as it may be. Sorry, Cyrus, no more quizzes for you.
Aw, man, you ruin everything.
Well, thanks for posting that article on the show Twitter feed so people can check it out. And again, as I said, the hour has gone by very quickly, and here we are at the end of the hour. So a lot of attention paid to technology, but that's good, though, because technology runs our lives, and it pays to be vigilant and careful about what you do. All right. Well, until tomorrow, we will take another 21-hour break, and then we'll be back at it again. Until then, as ever, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.